Hello, I'm Dorothy. In the mid-1990s, a group of older women shared their experiences of feminism at 10:40 dinner and discussion evenings. Their stories were recorded on tape. The podcast that you're about to hear is made from one of these recordings. The following questions shaped their stories. What attracted you to feminism? How has feminism impacted on your life? What have been your positive experiences of feminism? Have there been any disappointments? And what are your issues now? This is Pearlie's story.
I grew up with violence and abuse, much the same as some people grew up with security and care and love. I have two brothers, one who knifed a woman and the other one who raped a woman. One is dead now, and it was his suicide that made it possible for me to pull out of breakdown. I was 12 when my father had a toaster cord wrapped around my throat, and this was when toasters plugged in separately and you pulled the cord out. And I thought for sure I was going, and I just remember thinking, I haven't done my homework. And my brother jumped the stairs, and he had never got involved in any of the rows before. We had different fathers and the same mother. And so I was my mother's seventh child and my father's first. My brother and older brother and older stepsister used to stay very much out of the arguments. And I think where I know that I was a feminist very early on was how I stood in front of my mother and told my father off at somewhere at about the age of four. And of course he would just give me one swipe and he could then get on to my mother. I was about eight when I went to a police station and asked them to come up because my father was hitting my mother. And the policeman knocked on the door, and my mother, with her arm obviously broken, her eyes blackened, said, "Are you all right?" And she said, "Who told you?" And he pointed to me. She said, "I'm fine, thanks." He said, "Yeah, I can see that," and walked away. I think I learnt then that you couldn't look outside and ask for help outside, but that actually set up quite a very strange reaction in me as well. So that this night when my brother jumped the banister and by sheer surprise grabbed my father around the throat, it's not surprising that I saw the death of my father as the answer to all of our problems and was screaming things like, "Kill him, kill him." It didn't matter that my throat was very sore, I just wanted him dead. But my mother came to very quickly and suggested to my brother, pull him off, you know, and he's not worth it, son, he's not worth it. And my brother did. And my father got him and beat him to a pulp. And within 3 weeks, although he was only 17, he had joined the army because there was nowhere for him to go. He went to Pakapanyul and then he went to Korea and then he went to Malaysia. And at that time, soldiers from Malaysia were sent to Japan for furloughs, and my brother met geisha girls, as they were called, in Japan. And when he came back, he was very screwed up about sexuality with women, and he certainly had a Madonna whore mentality. He started to go out with a woman who had two children who was quite comfortable in her sexuality, and I liked her very much. Obviously, he didn't like the fact that she enjoyed her sexuality. He thought there was something wrong with that. So he started a relationship with a more prudish woman, if you like, I want a better word. He told me it was off with the first woman. And I went to see her about Christmas time, and I was newly married, and said, "Why don't you come and visit, you know?" I said, "I wish you were going with him again." She said, "What do you mean?" And I suddenly realised that he was playing the two of them off. Not very long after that, she tried to break it off. He was the returned soldier. He had a bayonet. He had a key to her flat. He stood under the staircase and he knifed her. And there were so many stitches from here to here. They were uncountable. He also cut the 14-year-old daughter's arm. And I think that by the time I had a son, the very horror that I would have a male child was just so horrible to me that when I had a son, I immediately tipped into breakdown very soon after that. So from 1968 to 73, I was in and out of New South Wales psychiatric centres. By the time I came to feminism, I had watched one woman commit suicide in front of me, another one at Parramatta River died in my arms, and I'd had so many shock treatments that they'd forgot about me. It was quite a long time before I felt that I pulled away from that. So that you can imagine the sort of person that I might have been in 1975 when I began recovering in 1973. I was angry. I was inarticulate. I went to Liverpool Women's Health Centre to advertise a self-help group I was in. And somebody said to me, "There's lesbians there." So I was newly separated from my husband and I wore a fake fur collar to make a statement. That very first night, there was a group of women sitting around like they are now, probably as many. And the woman who was facilitating it, who later became a very close friend, was sitting there with a pair of shoes at which the sole was falling off and so forth. And the way she took criticism for being a single mother was just so impressive to me that I was drawn back by that. But I fought feminism every bit of the way because I had nothing in common with many of the women that were in that room that night. And I didn't know where to put myself. I also felt that I was being told that the 35 years of my life that I'd lived to that date was useless because I hadn't known about feminism. I didn't know the right books. I hadn't read the right books. And I think you couldn't describe me as an easy person to get along with. I remember something Wendy Bacon said at that time. She was one of the people working at a Liverpool Women's Health Centre. I remember her saying, "We don't want yes people. If it takes you 2 years to decide, that's fair enough." But there were so many things that didn't attract me. And that was that when somebody said a meeting started at 7, it really started at 7:45. And you'd be hanging. I wouldn't mind if they told me to come at 7:45, but if you'd been hanging around for 3/4 of an hour. But most essentially, feminism gave me the education that I hadn't had. I'd left school at the age of 15 and been set to work 2 days later at a dry cleaner shop. And I just remember that I learned words like dichotomy, hegemony, and all these other words that I had never heard in my life before and half the time didn't know what it... But there was an enormous amount of criticism at that time, what I often think now of as po-faced feminism. There was the right and there was the wrong. And God knows, you see, we talk about censorship. I thought the censorship in the 70s, around 1975, was vitriolic. We were so right on, we were right off. There were funny stories about that time, because I was sitting at a group about 6 months after this group at Liverpool Women's Health Centre started on a Friday night. A woman suddenly turned to me and she said, "You know you're a lesbian, don't you?" And I looked at her. I thought, I'm 35 years old and somebody has to tell me the most important piece of information that there could be about your own life. I didn't reject the information. I knew immediately it was true. But I went straight back into my marriage. I think that it was one thing to be a feminist. And I don't think I knew this at the time, but I was shit scared. I had just pulled away from a breakdown to accept what it meant to be a lesbian, to accept the homophobia and so forth. It was already bad enough being mad. And I'd come up with sayings like, "I may be schizophrenic, but I'll always have each other." It was quite different to think of the world of the lesbian, if you like. So I said to my husband, after we had been separated a year, he wanted to go back, "I have started a relationship with a woman. It is an extension of friendship. If you can accept that, we could continue." He said he could, but of course he didn't. And probably within 6 weeks, I think the marriage might have been over. It took another 2 years. But the good thing about that was that in 1977, when I walked away from that relationship, I had absolutely no guilt, no doubt. And I think that that was the time when I would have said that feminism just didn't impact on my life. It became my life. It's an intrinsic part of identity that I couldn't separate now if I tried. And I was at that momentous International Women's Day march in 1975. And I think that those last 2 years of my marriage, I was no longer the person I'd been before. I fought. And I fought on the basis of what I thought was right. I was in various campaigns around Liverpool Women's Health Centre, including an abortion case that went when a girl between the ages of 14 and 16 had gone to the centre and asked for an abortion without her mother knowing. And then when her mother found out, the case went to court in Liverpool. And both the nurse and the doctor at the Liverpool Women's Health Centre were in court charged with it. That made me very angry because I felt that my mother would happily have had an abortion if she'd have known how. And that nobody really spoke about those of us who had to live the lives when abortion wasn't a possibility and how grim that would be, had been. And I think that there's no doubt that being a lesbian meant that I had to have a second adolescence. And it was as painful, even more painful than the first one, because having decided not to go to my friends and say, "Will you?" it required a bravery, going to clubs and so forth, and there were some very humorous experiences out of that, one of which I think is worth repeating here, of going to Ruby's and seeing a woman on a bar stool at the end of the bar and going up
She's moved your lot to dance.
Forget it, kid. I'm butch too.
And then I decided to go to Clover. It was a business women, lesbian business women's club, and I thought, well, I'm in the business of becoming a lesbian. That's true. And I got to the door of what was a Friday night social, kept the woman at the door so busy talking because I was so nervous of walking into that hall on my own. Finally, she said, oh, love, just go inside. So I just looked at that big dance floor, wooden dance floor, and saw two women, one red hair and standing. I didn't take much notice of the woman next to her, and I walked across this room, would you like to dance? And the one next to me had a chain around her neck and just shook it. So that was another 6 months or so before I got the courage to try again. And one night here, Carolyn and another woman came to Ruby's with me, and I can still remember them both saying, yes, yes, yes. So with the help of my friends, I sort of finally learned how to be brave. Many of you may know that there was a feminist landlady at that time, she's sitting on my left, who had a place in Petersham that made it possible for me and many other women like me to live cheaply in the inner city, and made it possible for me to leave my marriage with two children. The second time I left, my husband wouldn't leave the house, and so I did. But my children suffered in that it was found out that I was lesbian at school, and they were virtually thrown out of their schools. And I think that pattern began then, where the difficulties for both my sons was that not only did my husband and I split up a second time, but he married my best friend, and he substituted her children for his own. And looking at the difficulties of boy children who have a feminist mother and a lesbian mother, it is often very difficult to work through the issues that they deal with in adolescence. One of my sadnesses, if you like, is that one of my sons at the age of 30 is pretty well lost to marijuana smoking. I sometimes wonder if he'll make old bones. And my younger son lives in England, where he's married and has two children who I probably won't see very much. But when I look at the positive experience and aspects, there were two things that come to mind. One was that in 1979, I and another woman set up a small publishing company, come book distribution, come bookshop, called Women Write, that went up and down the east coast of Australia between Brisbane and Melbourne, and was very involved in distributing the feminist newspaper Rouge at that time. And that was a very positive experience. At the end of 2 years, although we failed, we had learned so much about the book trade that we decided to go to England, and I was there for 13 years and came back only 2 years ago. Part of that was that my partner gave birth to a child, Kate, who's now 15, and it remains one of the most wonderful positive experiences that Marie and I, despite splitting up when Kate was 5, have had a very positive experience in rearing Kate together. And although they are both still in England, Kate comes back every nine months and will be back again in August, and will again come back to live here next year when her schooling over there is finished. Meg came along when Kate was 5, and as three women rearing a girl between us, and with full knowledge of who her mother is, and not calling us mothers, but definitely a Pearlie and a Meg, if you like, it remains to me one of the most human nature positive experiences to know that it was possible, and that Kate feels it's a very positive experience. I suppose the disappointments are hard to pinpoint, because I think one of the things that's different for me now between the 70s and the 90s is that it was so collective in the 70s. And it's so individual in the 90s. I sometimes don't know where that puts you. So when talking about disappointments, I think mixed up in that with me, I received an enormous amount of criticism in the early years as a feminist. And I felt quite bruised by it. I might also say that my friend Carolyn took me to a meeting of Das Kapital where I didn't even understand the bloody first sentence. And so some of it was because straight ignorance, and I say ignorance because in many ways it's very hard. It's one thing for us to talk about consciousness raising as we did then, but I would have said it took something like 2 years for something to penetrate mine. Perhaps that's the reason for the criticism, but I do think sometimes it could have been kinder. Perhaps it's wrong of me to say that. But if you've taken criticism from feminists who can deal it with a big punch, you can take it anywhere. And I'm at the moment doing a postgraduate course at Wollongong University, which I talked myself onto and have had no education since the age of 15 on the basis of the books that I've had published to date, and I'm the only woman among four men, and one of them's the tutor. And I can't believe that every book we talk about is male. And I used to hear women say that, and I'm rather surprised at it. But I still think I can hold my ground, and that says an enormous amount. I think I can't say how appreciative and recognising I am of the so many women who contributed to my education. There's so many of them, I just couldn't mention them all by name. My issues now, I mean, the biggest one for me is I'm terribly frightened of the Howard government and the possibility of a sales tax. Living in Britain for 13 years, it was 25%, 17.5% tax if you've got the plumber in, the electrician. And 2 years ago, they brought in 8% on heating. I think we can't help as we get older be aware of economics, individual economics, living on a small income, knowing it's going to get smaller. If ever anything has to bring me out on the streets, it has to be that. If I could think of no other single issue, and partly I'm terrified and partly I'm angry. There are elderly people dying of hypothermia in Britain on the basis that they won't put the heating on. 8% tax on whether you've got oil heating, whether you've got electricity, whether you've got gas. And you can imagine, it never goes down. And one of the things that also frightened me is that New Zealand took on all those taxes and started them all off at 5%. They never go down again. And it will be very I'm sure the Labor government would be quite happy if it came back in again and they were there. They won't take them away again. The battle for me is very much, I think, about that. I also think that despite the years that have gone in between my breakdown and now, I am writing a book about madness, a novel. And I have to revisit the self that I was, the experiences that I had. I just can't get over sometimes the fact that I don't recognise the person who I used to be. It's so hard to relate to it. But the most overriding thing that I would want to think that was the issue was tolerance, the difference. I would like to think that the sort of tolerance that I craved for, perhaps still crave for, I'm able to give.